This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 16th of May 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week? Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Dunnellan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from any item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. For those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. Recordings are listed in date order. The most recent is first on the list. And you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on Awaz Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. Awaz Radio is on the DAB channel. You just retune your DAB radio and search for Awaz. And you can also listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. So on to our headline stories. What is the first story, please, Richard?
Traffic chaos in city caused by gas leak. Severe congestion over Jury Street works. The one-way system in Winchester has been gridlocked after a city centre road shut for gas repairs. SGN closed the thoroughfare for the urgent works on Monday, May the 12th, without giving an indication of when they might finish. Local ward member John Tippett Cooper said it could last all this week. Drivers have reported delays of up to 40 minutes, with traffic rerouted left towards the High Street from St George's Street. It's some of the worst sustained congestion in years. Businesses have reported a steep decline in trade. Jamie Sparks, who works on ground maintenance, had time to open the cab of his tractor to talk because the traffic was so slow. He said it was horrendous. Postman Ian Field called the traffic utter chaos, but added it was always like that in Winchester. Bryony Williams, 23, from Southampton, was delayed getting to her job as Winchester Youth Counselling. The congestion doubled her journey time. She said, "It's not great, I'm late for work now." A spokesperson for SGN said, "Winchester SGN engineers have been called to a gas escape outside the Theatre Royal. Due to the location of the escape in the centre of the road, for everyone's safety, we've put a road closure in place on Jury Street. Vehicle access for resident, business and to side road off Jury Street is being maintained past the works. Due to limited road space, there will be no access for HGV lorries. Bus routes are affected. We'd advise passengers to contact their service provider for the latest information about diversion routes. It's too early to say how long repairs will take to complete. As soon as we know more, we'll provide further updates. Thank you for your patience and understanding, even if it is wearing thin." City Councillor John Tippett Cooper said he'd been told it could be the end of the week before it's fixed. Jury Street traders said business had dropped sharply. Jacob Burgess, who works at Cabinet Room, said, "We've had fewer customers, but I would say there's not necessarily that many less people coming past." In an update on the situation on Wednesday, May the 14th, an SGN spokesperson said, It's still too early for us to say when our emergency work will be complete. We're digging in several parts of the road, and the road closure needs to remain in place. We know this is an extremely busy area and are working 24/7 to have this resolved as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, what's your headline story, please?
I have woman jailed for £600,000 fraud. A woman who stole more than £600,000 from the Hampshire branch of a medical equipment manufacturer in an elaborate Ponzi-like fraud scheme has been jailed. Jolene Groves, 47, of Oak Road, Bishop's Waltham, abused her position as an accountant at the Portsmouth branch of Nolato J-Care, siphoning payments meant for clients into her and her boyfriend's accounts, a court heard. It was also suggested that the fraud led to the loss of 125 jobs at the Portsmouth office after the company was forced to close its operations in Hampshire in 2020. At Winchester Crown Court on May the 9th, recorder Jodie Mittal sentenced Groves to 4 years in prison after she pleaded guilty to fraud by abuse of position. Prosecutor Matthew Lawson said Groves stole the money between 2017 and 2023 and continued to work from home for the Newcastle branch of Nolato after the Portsmouth office closed in 2021. The court heard that a company investigation revealed 84 records of Groves rerouting payments to her own accounts between July 2017 and September 2023. The total sum defrauded was £603,272.62. However, the firm believes the true amount could be as high as £1,637,473.90. Chris Gager, mitigating, explained that Groves used the money to fuel her drinking habit. There's no evidence of any lavish lifestyle, he said. The money has been spent on day-to-day living and to fund her alcohol problems. Sentencing, recorder Mittal said, you took just over £600,000 from a company that you had been employed by for many, many years. In 2023, it came to light that a supplier had raised an issue with the payment. You used some sort of flaw in the company's system to change the bank details. So instead of the money going to the suppliers as intended, they went either to your bank account or your partner's. What you did went undetected for some time. At the very least, your behaviour must have contributed towards the financial difficulties that the company had. The company had to close a branch in Portsmouth. I don't find that you directly caused that branch to close. Mr. Lawson reported that Nolato estimated Groves could have stolen more than £1 million in what he called a Ponzi-like scheme in which she used the bank account of her partner, Gary Wickenden. However, as the investigator could not access the company's full financial records beyond 2017, this could not be verified. He added, it is my opinion that Jolene Groves' fraudulent behaviour directly contributed to the closure of the Portsmouth site. The full fiscal impact of the fraud has also impacted the Newcastle site. The court heard how Groves was one of just two employees who requested to be transferred to the company's Newcastle headquarters after the Portsmouth office closed. However, she was allowed to work from her home in Bishop's Waltham after she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2021.
And now, as usual, we go on to the death notices, starting with Richard, please.
Ellis. Janet Felicity Ellis, peacefully at Winchester Heights Care Home on the 27th of April, age 92.
Gamblin. Margaret Jean Gamblin, peacefully at Hollybank Care Home, Botley, on the 4th of April, aged 93.
G. Key, Stuart G. Key, at Winchester Hospice, 1st of May, aged 82.
Hall, Barbara Ann Hall, née Pierce, a Winchester Cathedral and City Guide, and president of Friends of Hyde Abbey Gardens, peacefully at home on the 29th of April, aged 94.
Hill, Pamela Maureen Hill, formerly Millard, peacefully on the 19th of April, aged 95.
Langrish, James Langrish, known as Jimmy, peacefully at Westacre Nursing Home, 17th of April, aged 92.
O'Neill, Patrick Byron O'Neill, peacefully at Queen Alexandra Hospital, Portsmouth, on the 8th of April, aged 72.
Smart, Walter Thomas Smart, known as Wally, on the 3rd of May, aged 96.
Treglown, Richard Gordon Treglown, known as Dick, Captain RN, 21st of April.
Watson, Joe Watson, at St Giles View Care Home, on the 20th of April.
It is terrific, and we love it. Mr. Richards also thanked the 43 volunteers for their work, saying, "We can't do what we do without our volunteers." Charity Treasurer Peter Lydiard, ooh, gosh, that's me, said the charity had done exceptionally this year and thanked Winchester Rotary for allowing them to collect donations at the Clarendon Marathon, which raised £300 for the cause, the biggest single donation of the year. Mr. Lydiard also said that the charity was in a good place with an income of £843 this year, with outgoings of £772, the largest expenditure being its public liability insurance. At the meeting, Mr. Richards and Mr. Lydiard were both reappointed to their positions, along with six other committee members. After the business matters, an interesting talk was given by Fred Bates, London Blue Badge Guide, on the history of the Houses of Parliament. She had selected that donations be made to the Alzheimer's Society, and a retiring collection was made. It collected £168.40. For more details of the charity or to sign up to its free service, go to winchestertalkingnews.com. And now we have Christian comment read by Jackie, please.
And this is by Philip Crinks, and it's entitled, "Why the Second Half of Life Can Be Better." Recently, we heard again in church the question which Jesus puts to Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter does not enjoy the questioning. Certainly, he feels hurt when Jesus says to him the third time, "Do you love me?" But there is a good reason that Jesus gives Peter three chances to reaffirm his love. It goes back to the events of that dark night which preceded Jesus' crucifixion. That night it was three denials of Jesus which Peter uttered. Then the cockerel crowed, and Peter realized with horror how much his courage had failed him. The three questions give Peter a way to redeem that failure and to put himself right with God. After Peter's third affirmation, he is ready for what comes next, and Jesus' command is simple, "Follow me." Is Peter better placed at that point to follow Jesus faithfully? Surely, the experience of denial has formed him for the challenges which lie ahead as leader of that first tiny Christian community. Peter has learned something about human overconfidence and failing, and also about the redemption of these by God's grace. And he has learned the hard way. I've recently been reading a book by the American Franciscan writer Richard Rohr. It is called Falling Upward. It is subtitled A Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life. One insight Rohr has is that the second half of life can be just as fruitful as the first, or even more so, albeit in a different way. You probably spent, or are spending, the first half of life trying desperately to get things right, even though, if you are like me, you don't succeed too often. In the second half of life, we have the opportunity to ask ourselves not so much why we got it wrong, but how getting it wrong might have helped us. Just to ask that question is to take a step forward in humility and wisdom. Our fallings and our failings need not define us. Rather, they are a resource which can help us understand what does. God's love for us. Peter's life is certainly shaped in part by his three denials, but it is not those which define him so much as the three affirmations which redeem them and prepare him for his ministry. Jesus' life is likewise eternally shaped by the nails and spear and crown of thorns, those dear tokens of his passion. Still, his dazzling body bears, as Wesley famously wrote. But his victory over sin and death equally define his saving work. The psalmist knows growing up while keeping covenant with God and puts human yearning and faith into words. Oh, remember not the sins and offences of my youth, but according to thy mercy think thou upon me, O Lord, for thy goodness. All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep his covenant and his testimonies.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go on to letters to the editor, the usual mixed bunch of letters, starting with Richard, please.
And this comes from Geoffrey Brooking, and it is called Country First. So, our Labour government agrees to a trade deal with India that will add another $5 billion to the economy. And all we get from the Conservatives and their big buddies in Reform UK is outrage. When will these political populists ever grow up? Do they not realise the significant benefits that this brings to businesses? This deal in itself puts more money in the pockets of hard-working citizens, as well as helping to foster further growth in the health and digital sector. And let's not forget that India are themselves the fastest growing economy in the G20. Which is proof yet again of a government going for growth by putting country before party. Geoffrey Brooking, Saxley Court, Havant.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
This letter's from Laura Temple, headed Park and Ride. I'm writing to you as a concerned taxpayer regarding the repeated appearance of traveller groups at the Winchester South Park and Ride facility. On Thursday, May the 8th, there was a large group of travellers taking up nearly the entirety of one side of the car park. There were multiple large caravans and cars parked horizontally across several bay parking spaces. This has a huge impact on the availability of spaces for people such as myself who need to use the car park every day for work. I rely on the use of the park and ride facility every day as an NHS employee working at the Royal County Hospital in Winchester. As I am sure you can appreciate, on-site parking for staff and patients alike is extremely limited at the hospital. The use of the park and ride enables the general public to opt for greener modes of transport, reducing emissions and helping ease congestion in central Winchester. My employers, as many do in Winchester, encourage all staff to use the park and ride parking facility. This is not an isolated or rare occurrence. Travellers frequently inhabit the park and ride car parks every year, usually in the spring and summer months. When this happens, an immense amount of litter and destruction is left behind. Rubbish, including human waste and nappies, are discarded without any thought. Chairs and disposable barbecues have also been left behind. I have personally had the misfortune to arrive back at my car after a long day at work, only to see human fecal matter directly next to my driver's side car door. There is also the problem of antisocial behaviour when these groups of travellers stay at the park and ride. I have personally been concerned by the appearance of very young children who are not clothed appropriately and are clearly absent from any kind of schooling during term time. I have also seen dogs tied up without any access to shade or water on particularly hot days. The presence of travellers at the park and ride facilities causes a great deal of worry and anxiety for me and my colleagues. I worry that my car may be broken into or damaged. This kind of stress is not healthy and is not conducive to a productive and enjoyable day at work. I already work in a busy and demanding role, and feeling anxious about where my car is parked only adds to this. I can only imagine how off-putting the sight of traveller groups must be to tourists who have never visited Winchester before and may then choose not to ever visit again. In these times, when the local economy has been hit hard by the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and unsettled global socio-political issues, tourism is vital to a small city such as Winchester. My suggestion is that there needs to be an increased effort to prevent travellers from using the park and ride car parks. This could be achieved with the use of strategically placed concrete bollards that would stop caravans being able to access the car parks. I understand that this is not an easy subject to tackle, but surely the cost of preventing travellers from returning to our car parks would be significantly less than the costs involved in cleaning up the horrific mess once they've left. And that's from Laura Temple.
Thank you, Jackie. My letter is written by Nick Adams King, who is the leader of Hampshire County Council, and it's headed Civic Pledge. We can all play a part in maintaining Hampshire as a wonderful place to live. We all strive to take care of our neighbourhoods, our families, each other and our environment. And through our ongoing Hampshire Pledge, I'm proud to reaffirm the County Council's unwavering commitment to our 1.4 million residents. The pledge is our promise to deliver quality essential services while making every penny count, despite the significant financial challenges we face. Like many councils nationally, it's become a lot harder for us to keep doing all the things we used to do when our budgets are under such a strain. More people need our help and social care costs keep rocketing. We're doing everything possible to make your money work hard for you and support those most in need, but we need your extra help to keep Hampshire a place that we can all feel proud of. By working together via the Hampshire Pledge and taking actions that reduce our costs, we can ensure that we continue to deliver vital services for everyone in Hampshire. Whether it's recycling more and better, going online to use more of our services, supporting local businesses, volunteering in your community, or checking in on neighbours who might need some extra help, every action that you can take helps make a difference. To find out how you can play your part, you can visit website, which is hants.gov.uk/Hampshire Pledge. Thank you for your continued support. As I say, that is by Nick Adams King, who's the leader of Hampshire County Council. Richard, please.
Rupert Pitt argues for a 10-mile-an-hour limit. It was a convincing win for the Green Party candidate in the City Council by-election for the Colden Common Twyford ward. Chronicle May the 8th. There are now four Green councillors on Winchester City Council. I hope they're a breath of fresh air. But little seems to have changed on traffic reduction essential in Winchester. This interesting city has violently busy dual carriageways going through it on North Walls, Eastgate Street, St George's Street, Jury Street and City Road. Succeeding generations will look with astonishment. The traffic was allowed to dominate a city with many excellent buildings. They've stopped residents and visitors from appreciating them as they walk round. Southgate Street has many fine buildings to delight the eye, but their qualities cannot be enjoyed whilst cars are in front of them, and one has to be aware that they pose a threat if you cross the street at the wrong time. There ought to be a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit in Winchester, so pedestrians can feel safe walking round and don't have to keep a permanent watch for cars driving too fast. Cities are for people, not traffic. Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
This letter's from Councillor Martin Keary, headed Fight Continues. I had the pleasure, or honour, of reading the proclamation at Chandlersford Parish Council's celebration of VE Day last Thursday, probably because I'm the only member of the parish council who's old enough to remember VE Day. I was only 12, but I remember the intense feeling of relief that my grandmother and I wouldn't have to spend any more nights sleeping in an air raid shelter in our back garden and hoping that when the Nazi planes had gone, our house would still be there. My Sunday school teachers on the opposite side of the valley weren't so lucky. An incendiary bomb landed on their house and it was burned to the ground. They themselves were in their air raid shelter, so were unharmed, but had lost everything. That is war. You'll notice that I said Nazi planes, not German. Our war wasn't against Germans, but against Nazism. When we liberated the concentration camps, we realised just how inhuman Nazi policies and beliefs were, and how justified we were in defeating Hitler and what he stood for. Sadly, the world still has racists, and the fight goes on. And that's from Councillor Martin Keary of Park Road in Chandler's Ford.
Thank you, Jackie. My letter is written by Graham Tillotson, and it's headed Dangerous Junction in Winchester. When I first moved to Winchester over 4 years ago, the mini roundabout road markings on the Stockbridge Road at its junction with Berwick Road were so worn that Stockbridge Road drivers assumed they had priority and were zooming across the junction, not realising that it was still a mini roundabout. It made the junction especially prone to serious collisions. I was delighted when, 18 months later, all the road markings at the junction were repainted. But lo and behold, here we are, 2 years further on, and all the junction's road markings have practically disappeared again. Exactly the same has happened at the same time further up the hill where the Stockbridge Road meets Chilbolton Avenue. Both junctions are now back to a hazardous state. If it's the case that Hampshire's Highways Department is using cheap paint for road markings in an effort to save money, then that's a dangerous false economy. Both junctions are in need of urgent repainting before a nasty accident occurs. And that was written by Graham Tillotson of Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester. Richard, please.
This letter comes from Chris and Diane Bellwood, who are celebrating a running club. 35 years ago, my wife Diane and I founded a social running club called the Hursley Hash House Harriers. I had discovered hashing whilst working on the Isle of Wight. When I came back to the mainland, although I was sure that there was an established club in the Winchester area, I couldn't find any contacts for it. As my wife worked at IBM in Hursley at the time, and we lived relatively locally, we decided to adopt Hursley's name for our club. And our first run from the Dolphin Inn on Sunday, May the 6th, 1990, featured in that week's Hampshire Chronicle. The photograph shows a small number of enthusiastic runners, and then including me. The club is still going strong, and we thought it would be fun to celebrate this milestone by revisiting the Dolphin Inn and having a party on Sunday, May the 18th, that will run with The run will start from the pub at 11 a.m. All other details concerning this coming weekend's event can be found via the link on our website, www.hursleyh3.co.uk. Needless to say, our club has grown in numbers over its history, and we're currently expecting over 60 people. And that's from Chris and Diane Bellwood.
Thank you, Richard. You didn't start from the pub as well, did you? Sorry.
I might as well have done the hash I made of that.
Jackie, please.
This letter's from Kim Harrison, who's a lawyer, and is headed Out of Touch. Imagine you lost your child because of a reckless driver or negligent medical care. It is every parent's nightmare, and in this case, it was entirely avoidable. You then discover that your relationship to your child is not considered close enough to have that loss acknowledged through statutory bereavement compensation. This is the case for a bereaved father in England and Wales if he was not married to his child's mother at the time of the birth. Almost half of couples having babies this year are not married or in a civil partnership. The law is woefully out of touch. It is not just a legal problem. The acceptance of modern family relationships is a serious societal issue. The law is so rigid that many relatives are denied compensation if the closest person to them dies due to the negligence of someone else. No amount of money will ever bring their loved one back, but the modest payment is at least some recognition of the loss and that the death should never have happened. Devastated relatives say it is a further blow to learn their relationship was not close enough in the eyes of the law. Bereaved families deserve a fair and modern law. A workable model already exists in Scotland, where eligibility is considered on a case-by-case basis, meaning the closest people to the victim are not systematically included. And that's from Kim Harrison, who's president of the Association of Personal Injury Lawyers.
Thank you, Jackie. Now, I've got a very long letter here. Everybody's smiling at me because I'm telling a fib again. It's written by Jane Jessop and it's headed Book Thanks. We've been away, but have just seen a really lovely piece in last week's Chronicle about Tommy's book. Thank you so much. That is written by Jane Jessop of Winchester. Now the next letter from Jackie, please.
This letter's from Simon Lever about the smartphone ban. How refreshing! The use of smartphones during school hours is a negative influence, as they tend to replace normal, spontaneous human interaction and communication. Children and adults become detached from reality and become totally focused on a smartphone screen and contents. Technological expertise is essential, but sensible conditions are vital. Free childhood is an excellent and truly essential idea. Parents will need to be fully supportive, as it is in children's best interest. Well done, weak primary school. And that's from Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That is 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to them at the editor, 5 Applebrook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we move on to editorial comment from Richard, please.
And it's headed, The Chronicle, proud to be a local paper. A recent letter to a national newspaper snootily disparaged local papers for their emphasis on flower shows, fetes and charities. It was not clear what the letter writer was expecting. Stories from Gaza or Ukraine? Here at the Hampshire Chronicle, we're proud to concentrate on the local. A flick through the pages will show a wide variety of stories from courts, councils, and yes, local charities and shows. Local issues are not to be sneered at. All human life, including politics, is local. And Chronicle journalists are proud to report on the goings-on in the city and district. Local matters matter. So we've written about the tribute to the volunteer Christopher Ellis, who's died aged 95 and who spent 20 years selflessly helping out at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. His son, Mark Ellis, told us it was a vital part of his life, that commitment. It gave him purpose. He would have loved to have been a doctor, but the war finished when he was 16 and the only choice he had was construction. So, as well as VE Day, we report on the Community Day at St Paul's Church in Full Flood, which attracted 1,300 people and raised funds for its vital work. The annual general meeting of the Winchester Talking newspaper, which keeps people with sight problems in touch with news. And the celebration of the 185th anniversary of Mitchell devastation. Many things, all important to different people, all quietly improving the quality of life of everyone. Although we are all different, these things bind us together. At the Chronicle, we are part of that glue.
Thank you, Richard. That was nicely done. Right, now the opinion piece this week is written by Joanna Lewis and it's headed Cometh the Hour. Cometh the hour, cometh the woman. What's left of Winchester's surrounding green space is facing unprecedented threats. Thankfully, Debbie Tan, head of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, is spelling out the dire implications for nature unless the government's new planning and infrastructure bill is challenged. There's no growth on a dead planet, reported last week's Chronicle, using her words. This bill contains ludicrously developer-friendly proposals, allowing them to pay to pollute. Profit-focused companies responsible only to shareholders already get away with destroying local habitats and green spaces, devastating local rivers and indirectly creating intense pressure on the local infrastructure. They simply agree to plant some conifers in Scotland to offset the damage and walk away. Now the equivalent of the four horsemen of the apocalypse approaches our countryside if we consider the threats around Langham Lane, the wildlife-rich areas within St John Moor Barracks, Bushfield, Chilbolton, Michelover. I was lucky to live near Langham Lane and Littleton for 12 years. The fields, hedgerows and ancient hollowways and woods are utterly priceless. They are home to so much nature, fresh air and beauty. I'm heartbroken that these spaces are threatened. Living with developer aggression and a gnawing sense of impending loss became unbearable. Moving at least brought some respite. But there's no real escape. For it's not just the immediate destruction of vital green space in these areas, brutally replaced by unsustainable, badly built, ugly buildings for easy profit. The River Test is threatened. Marine life in the Solent is failing. The water table is denuded. Only creative resistance now will help secure a living planet for the generations to come. So, three cheers for a new grassroots spirit of revolt, such as the campaigns to stop the Kier Group to destroy Langham Lane. Buy Back Bushfield is leading the way, fighting to save a designated site of importance for nature conservation, priority habitats and protected species. The landowners, the church commissioners, are hypocritical and disdainful of their local flock. Attempting to stem their flagging congregations, chirpy t-shirt-wearing vicars with dyed goatees tell us to walk with them in nature, where God is omnipresent, that by worshipping the natural world, we worship the divine. Why, then, trash vast tracts of green space, sell off vital habitat, and neglect parish church ground? Talking of sacred ground, in North Hampshire, even landscape immortalised by Richard Adams in Watership Down is threatened. Villagers near Kingsclere are taking Anglo Renewables to court for contravening modern slavery laws. It's an ingenious attempt to prevent farmland near ancient woodland being turned into solar panel fields. Campaigners like Sheila Openshaw are exposing the gigantic farce of this form of greenfield grab and lazy profiteering. China, reliant on fossil fuel, makes the panels using slave labour. These are then shipped across the globe, nor can they be recycled after their use by date expires. Also, there's a disturbing hidden benefit lurking within this money-making bracket for planning authorities. Instead of insisting solar panels go on homes, urban infrastructure, car park roofs, etc., councils prefer to grant permission to solar farm companies. Then, when the developer requests come in to build on fields, including the fields with solar panels now conveniently relabeled brown sites, councils can grant permission without losing any sleep. We need the spirit of Dunkirk that got this country to VE Day. We are a small island. Our depleted land, rivers and seas are dying. Our lack of biodiversity is appalling. Natural resources in this region cannot sustain any more large-scale housing developments, let alone the infrastructure that demands. That's why I am proud to be NIMBY. Unless we fight to keep our backyards, then there is no future for the next generation. Truly, NIMBYs shall inherit the earth. Well, now we have Belgium, which, as you probably recall, is an alternative view of the news. Read by Jackie, please.
Hampshire man looks back on VE celebrations. The 80th anniversary of the Allied victory in Europe may have brought much hand-wringing about the dangers of forgetting our fraught past, along with those who fought to earn the peace we still enjoy today. But this VE Day, there is at least one man who remembers exactly where he was as the celebrations ramped up in May 1945. David Willetts was just five when he was photographed in a pony trap on Dane Road in the Hyde neighbourhood of Winchester, along with a motley crew about to attend one of the many street parties thrown at the time. The Hampshire Observer, which was later to merge with the Chronicle, described the scene. The party of more than 120 children assembled at the blitzed area in Hyde Street and marched, or by horse and trap in this case, to the parish hall. The photo, taken on May 25, 1945, shows David sitting in the trap, looking slightly irked because, as he explained, he was not allowed to take part in the horse riding as he was deemed to be too young. The picture was taken near the site where a German bomb had landed, in the only raid, David said, to hit the city during the war. Among those who can be seen in the image is Joy Simpson, later to become Joy Brown, sitting on one of the horses to the left of the track. Her silhouette is particularly special to David, as the pair met again on Dane Road in 1995 to recreate the scene for the 50th anniversary celebrations of VE Day. An article penned by Joy, who was born in the now-shut First In, Last Out pub in April 1938, appeared in the Chronicle in May 1991, detailing the emotion she had felt on seeing the photo in the paper. She wrote, "What a surprise and what happy memories came flooding back on seeing myself in the photograph in your paper with Mr. Hogan and others in Hyde Street at the end of the war." Now, David has travelled to Winchester for what he says may be his last chance to celebrate that day 80 years ago. His father was the managing director of the long-closed Winchester Brewery, whose headquarters lay in the building next to the Mucky Duck pub on Hyde Street. The family moved to Bournemouth in the early 50s, where David still lives.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we've got a few articles about an event which happened during the past week, which is VE Day. So can we have the first story, please, Richard?
Yes, and it's about hundreds who gathered for the lighting of the beacon. There was a nostalgic mood in the slightly colder than ideal conditions on Otterburn Common as the sun went down on VE Day, as hundreds gathered to see the lighting of the beacon. Revellers were kept warm, however, by Sam's Mobile Catering's fish and chips, one of the few foods not subject to rationing during the war, and copious quantities of beer flowing out from the Otter across the road. The event is the last in a series of beacon lightings put on by a partnership between Otterbald and Albrook Parish Councils to remember our past and heritage. Otterbourne Parish Councillor Stacey King said, "This has been our fourth celebration together. We did the big lunch, we did the D-Day last year and VE Day last year. And then last year we won awards at the Village of the Year Award. Now we've united for our fourth event." Speaking about the importance of fish and chips, Sam Spelling of Sam's Mobile Catering said, "It's an old traditional English food, isn't it? We've served about 150 people so far this evening. The event's great. We did it last year for the D-Day commemoration." "We'll meet again" had begun to play over the PA, and it was soon time to light the beacon and reflect upon the 80 years that have passed since the war in Europe ended. Providing additional musical entertainment was the 14th Eastleigh Scout and Guide Band, while Dave Shaw bore the standard during the somber moments before the lighting. The evening rounded off a series of VE Day events in the Winchester area, including an address by the Bishop of Winchester and an event at the Hope Church on Middlebrook Street. The Winchester district has many connections to the Second World War. Peninsula Barracks, now home to five of Winchester's military museums, was the home base and training depot of the King's Royal Rifle Corps and the Rifle Brigade. The city then became the headquarters of the US Army's 9th Infantry Division, nicknamed the Ultra-Reliables, in the lead-up to D-Day. The barracks were vacated by the rifle depot and used to house this US regiment. In Southwick, Southwick House became the headquarters for the main Allied commanders, including General Eisenhower, Admiral Ramsay, and General Montgomery. The large wall maps that were used on D-Day are still in place in the house's map room. The war leaders famously met in a railway siding at near Droxford to make final plans for the invasion. Winchester was not just a significant location during the war. 2,455 Winchester College pupils and alumni served in the armed forces during World War II. The names of those who died are commemorated in the War Cloister.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Gurkha hero's story told on the 80th anniversary. The story of a Gurkha hero was celebrated on the 80th VE Day anniversary. On May the 8th, 1945, Prime Minister Winston Churchill declared the end of the war in Europe, a victory over Nazi Germany and its allies. However, the war in the Far East against Japan continued, involving many brave soldiers, including Gurkhas. Among the Gurkhas, Honorary Lieutenant Kalu Singh Chhetri stood out. Captured during the fall of Singapore in 1942, he endured years of harsh Japanese captivity, but led continuous defiance against efforts to force the Gurkhas into the Japanese-aligned Indian National Army. His leadership and resilience under torture are preserved in records at the Gurkha Museum Trust. He was the recipient of 11 medals for his bravery and service throughout the First and Second World Wars. These include the Member of the Order of the British Empire, MBE, the Military Cross, and the Order of the British Empire First Class. His devotion to duty of the highest order gained him honorary lieutenant status in retirement, according to his MBE citation. The MBE citation details the torture endured by Subedar Major Kalu Singh Chhetri as a prisoner of war from 1942 to 1945 and praises the Gurkha soldiers' extraordinary leadership, moral and physical courage, tenacity, resource and devotion of the highest order. The continuing war in the Far East saw approximately 140,000 Gurkhas serve Britain in different theatres of conflict. Their contributions to the Second World War were pivotal in regions like Malaya, Burma, India, and various spots in Africa and the Middle East. The enduring legacy of Honorary Lieutenant Kalu Singh Chhetri is preserved by his grandson, Warrant Officer Class 2 Kadak Bahadur Chhetri, a third generation Gurkha and member of the Gurkha Staff and Personnel Support, GSPS, company. He is a decorated member of the British Army with multiple medals and citations acknowledging his service. He said, "Gurkhas have loyally served the Crown for over 210 years. None more so than my grandfather, Honorary Lieutenant Kalu Singh Chhetri, and his son, my late father, Captain Bishnu Bahadur Chhetri. They served with courage, conviction, and drew upon their heritage during difficult times, as have I. While researching his grandfather's story and awards, Warrant Officer Kadat Chhetri discovered an unrewarded MBE. His medals and a letter he wrote as a POW can be viewed at the Gurkha Museum in Winchester.
Now, my story about VE Day is headed Service to Remember VE Day 80 Years On. An evening service to commemorate VE Day 80 saw a packed Winchester Cathedral on Sunday, May the 11th. The Reverend Canon, Dr. Roland Ream, addressed the congregation at 3:30 p.m. He said, "Thank you all for gathering here today on such an important, joyous occasion. As we remember the many soldiers, sailors and airmen who gave their lives restraining evil and opposing tyranny, so we also come in thanksgiving for those who continue to strive for peace on this planet. We gather joyfully together as those who gathered on the first Victory Day, glad of each other's company and grateful for the laughter and joy that follows times of sadness and loss." Also present was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith. Speaking before the service, he said, "It is a very important anniversary because I suspect by the time we come round to the 90th, or maybe the 100th, any veterans will be long gone, and you then get a change from people who have had a personal experience of it to what is just history, and it becomes like the Boer War or Waterloo or just another event examined by historians, but the living personnel links will have gone." The Mayor noted the variety of the crows which had descended on the cathedral, praising the Club Scouts and Boy Scouts who had drawn up ranks outside the cathedral before the service. Charlotte Dransfield and Honour Gillies, representing the Lord Lieutenant's Cadres, were acting as ushers. "It's a good event," Charlotte said. "It's good to showcase what's happening and remember stuff that's happened, because obviously it's important to where we are now." Honour added, "I think it's really key to celebrate VE Day to remember that we weren't always at peace and we didn't always have the security that we have at the moment. I think it's really important to remember those who gave up quite a lot." Other notables present at the service were the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mountstephen, and the Duke of Wellington, Arthur Wellesley. Richard, your VE Day story, please.
Yes, another church pays its respects. Hope Church in Winchester opened its doors and hosted an afternoon of joy in celebration of VE Day. Decorating each table was war memorabilia, such as copies of ration books, soldiers' letters and old newspaper copies. Guests included the Mayor of Winchester, military veterans, members of the church and event sponsors. The Mayor said, "I think it's become apparent how fragile democracy and freedom is, and it reminds people of the huge sacrifice that was made. It's becoming history, and those that were there won't be for much longer, so that the younger generation need to remember." Raising money for SSFA, an armed forces charity, the event held history and VE Day themed quizzes, a raffle, and songs performed by Amy Baker, including "We'll Meet Again" that got the party on its feet. By the end, the event had raised over £200 from the auction of raffle tickets alone. Monica Gill, 85, organiser, said, "This was only made possible by our sponsors. They've funded the whole thing. Without them, we couldn't have done it. It's such an important day, and I think the youngsters don't appreciate it as such. It's particularly special if you know people that served. My grandson is now in the Royal Navy, and I'm so proud." Outside the building was also a 1940s Jeep, a family heirloom brought by Chris Harris, which grabbed the attention of many passers-by. Member of Hope Church, Delise Timmerman, 83, said, "It was nice that Hope Church gave us the rooms to have such a wonderful event. We must keep our traditions up for our soldiers. Our life is all thanks to them."
Thank you, Richard. Now, a few items of local events which you might be interested in the coming few weeks. Sunday the 25th of May at the Winchester Theatre Royal, Swinging at the Cotton Club featuring the Lindy Hop Dance Company and the Harry Stratters Hot Rhythm Orchestra. I'm particularly interested in that because I've got tickets to go. So there. Thursday, the 5th of June, My Dear Cassandra, a walk through Regency Winchester with quotes from Jane Austen's books, poems and letters read by Georgian players. Saturday, the 7th of June, has the Winchester Cheese and Chili Festivals at the North Walls Recreation Ground. Wednesday, the 11th of June, Chesil Railway, Winchester Guided Walking Tour, which looks at the other railway that used to serve Winchester. Thursday, the 12th of June, Death Cafe Winchester, which sounds a bit ominous. Death Cafe is an opportunity to talk openly about death and dying. There is no agenda, no speakers, just what participants want to talk about. Anyway, that is the Cabinets Rooms in Jury Street. And also on Thursday the 12th, Sherlock Holmes and the Thief of Antiquity. That is a family-friendly Victorian mystery adventure at Winchester Theatre Royal. Right, we go now on to items of general news, starting with Richard, please.
Rugby ace to visit for Dementia Action Week. A Rugby World Cup winner is set to visit Winchester as part of a week of events to mark Dementia Action Week. Home Instead, Central Hampshire, has organised a week of events which will run from May the 19th to the 25th. The highlight of the week will be on Friday, May the 23rd, when Steve Thompson, MBE, Rugby World Cup winner and dementia campaigner, will join the team at the Broadway outside the Guildhall from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Steve, who was diagnosed with early onset dementia, has become a powerful voice in the national conversation and will be there to meet the public and share his story. He'll be supporting the Virtual Dementia Bus, an innovative and immersive experience which allows participants to better understand the day-to-day challenges faced by people living with dementia. The bus will be available to the public from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and is completely free to attend. Steve said, "I'm proud to support Dementia Action Week in Winchester and help shine a light on what it's really like to live with this condition. The virtual dementia bus is a powerful tool that I wish more people could experience. It's moving, eye-opening, and it helps build real empathy. Since my diagnosis, I've made it my mission to raise awareness and keep the conversation going. My book, Unforgettable, shares my journey and the reality of living with early onset dementia. This is a fight we all need to be part of." The week is being delivered in partnership with local organisations, businesses and health professionals, including Dementia Friendly Winchester, Everyman Cinema, Hillier Gardner Centre Winchester and St John's Winchester. Melissa Burnett, Director and General Manager of Home Instead, Central Hampshire, said, "We're absolutely thrilled to be working with our community partners once again to bring such a meaningful programme to Winchester. We encourage everyone to visit the virtual dementia bus and take part in this important week."
Jackie, please.
Two more private schools to merge. Two Hampshire private schools have announced a merger in the wake of the Labour government's VAT charges. Prep School Prince's Mead, just outside Kingsworthy, and King Edward VII School in Southampton officially announced the move via social media channels on Tuesday, May the 13th. The merger will come into force from September the 1st. Both institutions say they remain in a strong and stable financial position, consistently generating a surplus year on year. However, many fee-paying schools have suffered since they were forced by the government to pay 20% VAT on their education and boarding prices. This has translated directly to higher fees for parents at most private schools. Recently, the head of Winchester College, Elizabeth Stone, warned that many parents can no longer afford to send their children to private schools. At the University of Winchester's Education Question Time, hosted by Victoria Derbyshire. Prince's Mead is the smaller of the two schools, with just under 300 pupils aged between 3 and 11, while King Edward VII has just under 1,000 pupils between the ages of 3 and 18, as it includes a prep school. The merger comes only a few weeks after Winchester College and Pilgrims also announced a similar link-up. Adam King, head at Prince's Mead, said, "This merger strengthens our position for the future, allowing us to enhance everything we already do so well, while staying true to our values. We are excited about the new opportunities this partnership will bring for our pupils, staff, and wider community." Neil Parker, head at King Edward VII School, added, "I do apologise, King Edward VI School," added, "This is a significant step forward, building on our long-standing relationship with Prince's Mead. This merger builds on the many strengths of our schools, and with the success of Kes Prep in Romsey, we are proud to be growing our community and further strengthening our position as the leading provider of co-educational education in the region. This partnership enables us to offer even greater opportunities to our pupils, while maintaining the outstanding education and experience families expect from our schools." Rebecca Smith, head at King Edward VI Preparatory, said, "Through our experience at Kes Prep, we've seen how shared expertise and strategic support can enhance the unique strengths of a preparatory school. We welcome Prince's Mead and look forward to strengthening the network of outstanding preparatory schools across the region." Durant Davis, Chair of Governors at King Edward VI School, said, "This merger represents a natural and positive evolution of our school's relationship. It reflects our strategic commitment to nurturing high-quality co-educational pathways from the earliest years through to sixth form. We are proud to welcome Prince's Mead into our Kes family and look forward to what we will achieve together." Families across both schools have been informed and reassured that their children's education will continue uninterrupted, with a focus on ensuring a seamless transition and clear communication throughout the process.
Thank you, Jackie. The next piece is headed "Tribute Paid After Death of Its President Who Loved Theatre." The Chesil Theatre has announced the death of its president, Tom Williams. Mr. Williams, who joined the Theatre Society in 1979, was a major contributor to the theatre community in Winchester and beyond. He was associated with the theatre since he started his role at Hampshire County Council in Winchester in 1979. By the age of 17, Mr. Williams had already played roles such as Macbeth, Lear and Mark Antony. He met his future wife, Vara, during a performance of Twelfth Night, where she played Olivia to his Orsino. In 1982, he became chairman of the Society, a role he took on again in 1990 and 1996. During his time with the Society, Mr. Williams appeared in or directed nearly 70 productions, portraying a variety of characters from Eeyore to God. He also had a fine singing voice and was a member of WEMOS, Winchester Musicals and Opera Society, appearing in several Gilbert and Sullivan productions and My Fair Lady as Professor Higgins. Mr. Williams was part of the team that began discussions to extend the Chesil Theatre in 1998. Despite setbacks, the team persevered, and he was able to celebrate the recent purchase of the land, the granting of the freehold, and the knowledge that real progress was finally being made. He was elected president of the Society in 2003. The Chesil Theatre said, "Tom was in the team who in 1998 began discussions with St John's to extend the Chesil Theatre. Despite setbacks, they persevered until Tom felt it was time that he stepped down whilst continuing to support in any way he could. He was able to celebrate the recent purchase of the land, the granting of the freehold, and the knowledge that real progress was finally being made." elected president in 2003, Tom hosted visitors, including the Lord Lieutenant of the County, Lady Mary Fagan, Sir Ian McKellen, and a multitude of mayors. Alongside his work for the Chesnel, Mr. Williams served on several national arts bodies, representing the contribution that amateurs make to the country's cultural life. He chaired the Central Council for Amateur Theatres for 10 years and was on the board of the Voluntary Arts Network, a body organised by the Arts Council, and served on the Theatre Safety Committee alongside professional colleagues. As a member of the Little Theatre Guild, which he also chaired, he gave evidence to the Parliamentary Select Committee on Culture, Media and Sport. In 2012, he was made an honorary associate of the Little Theatre Guild, a rare honour to mark his years of service. When a critic in The Guardian used amateur as a negative way, Mr. Williams wrote, pointing out that its true meaning is not of low standard, but done for love, not payment. The Chesnel Theatre said, Tom was an amateur who loved theatre. Mr. Williams died at home on April the 6th, aged 86 years. He was husband to Vara, father to Keris and Gavin, and grandfather to Emily, Kieran, Alex, Kai and Lily. And a celebration of his life took place at Chesnel House on Thursday, May the 15th. Richard, please.
UK's loudest amphibian's remarkable comeback. The UK's loudest amphibian, the Natterjack toad, has made a remarkable comeback in the South Downs National Park following a conservation project to provide suitable habitats for the noisy creature. A total of 28 toadlets have been counted at Blackmoor, Hampshire, following the reintroduction programme which started in 2021. This is the first time that Natterjack toads have been recorded breeding at the site in 50 years. Prior to this, the toad, whose distinctive rasping call can be heard up to a mile away, had only been found on a single site in the National Park at Woolmer Forest, Hampshire. In neighbouring Sussex, the toad is considered locally extinct. Work to provide new suitable territory, led by the Amphibian and Reptile Conservation, ARC, has included creating shallow ponds and restoring heathlands for the reintroduction of cattle grazing to create perfect conditions for the toads to return. Jack Harper from ARC said, "We're delighted that everyone's hard work is beginning to pay off, and the future of this fascinating species is looking brighter in the region. This is a great step to recovering the species within the national park and a good blueprint for future reintroduction efforts. Thank you to all those involved." Olivia French, Heathlands project team leader for the South Downs National Park, said, "It's a wonderful success story for nature recovery and shows that wildlife can thrive given half a chance. With a breeding population at Woolmer and now Blackmoor as well, the future for Natterjack toads is certainly looking brighter than it was."
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Bench in Swanmore set on fire. A fire hit a Hampshire village park only 2 days after VE Day celebrations were held there. Swanmore Recreation Ground had hosted events marking the 80th anniversary of victory in Europe on the weekend. According to the fire service, a crew from Bishop's Waltham were called to a small fire in the open at Swanmore Recreation Ground on the evening of Monday, May the 12th at 19:14. Firefighters used one hose reel jet to extinguish the fire, which has damaged a park bench and the grass around the bench. The incident has been passed to Hampshire Constabulary. The residents, including the local teenagers, started to fight the fire with buckets and a garden hose. Police inquiries are ongoing.
Thank you, Jackie. Boomtown plan for festival expansion. Boomtown Festival has formally submitted an application to expand its site to the hills around Cheesfoot Hill to accommodate more than 10,000 extra revellers. At South Downs National Park Planning Committee, councillors voted partially in favour, although they reduced the plan to 1 year from a proposed 5 years due to a lack of documentation. Members of the public also spoke out against the impact of the festival has on wildlife, in spite of the applicant's insistence that the new deal will lead to a net gain in biodiversity. Terence Jones said, "Boomtown kills birds. That's the impact of 2,000 construction workers for 5 weeks with heavy machinery, followed by thousands of tents and cars and people, all in the season where ground birds are nesting." The plan, in Boomtown's words, includes the following conditions. Host Boomtown annually for the next 5 years at the Matterley Estate, increase the planning permission capacity from 65,999 to 76,999 attendees, which include 1,000 Sunday tickets reserved for the local community. Enhance our commitments to managing impacts on ecology, transport, sound and lighting, ensuring that Boomtown continues to bring cultural, social and economic benefits to the local area. Deliver a 10% biodiversity net gain, contributing positively to the natural beauty of South Downs. Members of the committee, however, were irked by the lack of certain important documents, including some of those pertaining to biodiversity. Councillor Annan Aylesbury said, "I think the point needs to be got across to the applicants that they must get their ducks in a row. I'm not adopting a highly untrusting attitude, but this is really important. It is really contentious. And the thing that needs to be sorted out, not as it is now, with some of the most important background information yet to be provided. It's not that I, as a member, don't trust our officers or anything. It's just that it's not the correct way to deal with such a major and unusual, frankly, proposal inside a national park. As a result of these reservations, councillors voted to accept the proposal, but on a 1 year rather than a 5 year basis. This gives the National Park the opportunity not to move forward with the application should Boomtown not respect the conditions that it lays out." Boomtown has been approached for comment. Richard, please.
The Westgate School is one of UK's best performing. The Westgate School has been recognised as one of the highest performing secondary schools in England by SSAT, the school's students and teachers network. This recognition comes from the 2025 Educational Outcomes Awards, which highlight schools based on their performance data and progress scores from 2024. The Westgate School has achieved remarkable results, placing it in the top 10% of schools nationally for student progress and attainment in the 2024 GCSE exams. The SSAT Educational Outcomes Database compares all state-funded schools in England. To receive an Educational Outcomes Award is a significant achievement, reflecting the hard work of the entire school community. The Westgate School was also awarded an outstanding categorisation by Ofsted in November 2023, further solidifying the reputation for excellence.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Road to close for a month. A road in Otterbourne will close for up to a month due to essential works. Hampshire County Council announced Boyett Lane will shut between Otterbourne Hill and Chapel Lane from Monday, May the 19th. The closure is expected to last 4 weeks, operating 24 hours a day between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. until completion, although it could be longer. An alternative route has been planned through Otterbourne Hill, Winchester Road, A335, B3335, Pitmore Road and back to Boyett Lane. To view the full public notice, go to the notice section of Traffics and Roads on publicnoticeportal.uk.
Thank you, Jackie. Venue will be a vibrant space. A landmark Winchester venue is set to reopen this summer under new owners. Abbey Mill in Abbey Gardens, which previously traded as In the Park, will be renamed the Abbey Mill. The site will offer co-working during the week and social events in the evenings and on weekends. The co-working will be on a membership basis and offer flexible workspaces, private offices, meeting rooms and call pods designed around the needs of modern working. Barrister coffee will be served alongside healthy food options. The Abbey Mill will also offer private event hire for anything from business networking to birthday parties, supported by a bar and kitchen. It will also host pop-up food evenings and a weekend food venue open to the public. The business is led by Winchester locals John Knight and Darren Collins, and supported behind the scenes by partners Jack Snowden and Obey El Kayet. John is known in the local hospitality scene, owning the Orangery Cafes in Winchester and Salisbury, as well as popular food truck Original Fry Up Material. Darren is an advertising executive specialising in producing campaigns and commercials for the sports and entertainment industry. John said, "The Abbey Mill is a beautiful space, and so when the opportunity arose to keep it living and breathing, we knew we had to go for it. It's a place of work and play since 1750, and we think co-working elements provide a good foundation to reopen the space to locals in evenings and weekends for event hire, pop-ups and other functions, not to mention takeaway drinks and snacks, to serve the popular park and playground." Darren said, "Having travelled a lot with my work over the years, I've used many co-working spaces around the world, so I'm excited to try some of these experiences to create an interesting offering in one of Winchester's most charismatic buildings. As remote working and the gig economy continue to grow, we want to create a vibrant space where locals will want to spend their working day alongside like-minded individuals. Pre-opening inquiries can be made via email to hello@abbeymillwinchester.com or through other Instagram pages. The venue is going through a light refurbishment and aim to be open for service this summer." Richard, please.
Horse fair returns. Drivers are being warned of road closures ahead of the Wickham Horse Fair. The main road through the centre of Wickham, Fareham Road and the Square, will be inaccessible to drivers during the event on Tuesday, May the 20th. The fair sees crowds gathered around barriers in the village as horse and pony-drawn carriages ride past them, with members from the traveller community both racing and buying and selling horses. It is thought that the fair is one of the longest-running events in Hampshire and possibly even the UK, with the fair's origins dating back to 1269, when King Henry III granted a charter for a weekly market in Wickham.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Church Community Day attracts 1,300 people. More than 1,300 people attended a Community Day event in Winchester. St Paul's Church in Fulford hosted the event on Saturday, May the 10th, which saw a range of activities and entertainment for all ages. The day featured live music, dance performances, food and drink stalls, a children's farm, face painting, a bouncy castle and a dog show. Performers included the Florian School of Dance, local band Borough Beats and Fulford Strings. St Paul's Preschool also entertained with action songs and nursery rhymes, led by preschool supervisor Sylvia on the guitar. The cake stall, raffle and tombola were popular attractions, along with fairground games such as Hook a Duck and Beat the Goalie. The Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mount Stephen, and Winchester MP Danny Chambers were among those who attended. The dog show saw Becky Lynch and her dog Misty take first prize with a near-perfect score. Second and third place winners, as well as winners of the Waggiest Tail and Most Famous Owner categories, also received rosettes. More than 100 volunteers from St Paul's and St Matthew's churches worked to ensure the event ran smoothly. Bill Lucas, church warden and co-organiser, said, There is a highlight. This is a highlight of our year. There is such an atmosphere of joy and community spirit. Apart from it being immense fun for us, it's also a way to do something for the parish and the wider community. I'm so grateful to the 100 plus volunteers from both churches who worked so hard to make this possible. Rector Jonathan Rowe said, "I've been at St Paul's for 3 years now, and this was the best community day yet. We have more people here than ever before, and the atmosphere was great. I personally really enjoyed getting the chance to chat to many local people I hadn't met before, and I'm really hoping we'll see some of them again at our regular weekly events, such as Coffee Pot, our Supper Club, Toddler Group, Bumps and Babies, and so on."
Thank you, Jackie. Knife man held in unit for public safety. A Winchester man accused of trying to murder his mother's partner out of the blue has been detained in a secure psychiatric hospital. Luke Stride, 34, was at his mother's home in Fox Lane, Stanmore, on the evening of January the 3rd last year when he attacked her and her partner with a knife as they sat watching Heartbeat on TV, a court heard. Stride was initially charged with attempted murder, but Judge Angela Morris later ruled that he was not fit to plead due because he had been diagnosed with schizophrenia before his trial at Winchester Crown Court. The charge was later amended to wounding Leslie Fools with intent and occasioning actual bodily harm to Julie Stride. Jessing Stride, who appeared via video link in his sentencing on May the 7th, Judge Morris, the recorder of Winchester, said, "Your mother told the court that your mental health had been deteriorating. The event the jury found you had done was out of the blue when your stepfather was seated in the lounge of his house where you entered and attacked him viciously. The attack left your stepfather in very serious condition, which caused him to be hospitalised for a period of 2 weeks. The judge described how the attack had left Mr. Fools partially blind, before adding, "There is no discussion that you were unwell at the time when you committed these offences and that you found unfit to be tried by the jury." Mr. Fools is Mrs. Stride's partner and not Stride's stepfather. Of Stride's condition, the judge said, "I am satisfied that you were suffering from a mental disorder, namely paranoid schizophrenia with delusions." She ruled Stride should be detained at Ravenswood House, a medium secure facility for adults with mental illnesses. However, she detailed that he could be held indefinitely. "I'm satisfied that because of the nature of the offence and having regard to the risk that you will commit further offences, it is necessary to protect the public from serious harm." On February the 23rd, a jury of 5 men and 7 women found that Stride had wounded Mr. Fools with intent. However, they did not find that Stride was guilty of causing actual bodily harm to his mother. On the evening of January the 3rd last year, the court heard Stride accused Leslie Fools in his 70s of murdering his father, who had died in 2001. During the trial, Giles Bedloe, prosecuting, detailed how Stride then launched himself at Mr. Fools, who was unable to prevent the defendant striking him with a knife. Mrs. Stride tried to stop her son, sustaining cuts to her hands, before Mr. Fools managed to snap the blade of the knife and throw it away. However, Stride then grabbed a porcelain ornament, smashing it into the side of his head. It was soon after that that Mrs. Stride and Mr. Fools' neighbour came upon the scene. "He was shocked when he entered the living room," said Mr. Bedloe. "There was a lot of blood everywhere." He had initially been charged with attempted murder, but Judge Morris ruled this was no longer appropriate considering his condition. Richard, please.
Well, a change of tone here. Chambers 18th Music Festival is a huge success. The 18th Winchester Chamber Music Festival was a huge success. It took place for over 4 days at the start of May, with 8 concerts and 4 linked events. The festival attracted near-capacity crowds who enjoyed performances by internationally renowned chamber musicians. The festival began with a school's concert where students from Stanmore Primary School performed songs that they had written. The Zenith Quartet, students from the Royal Academy of Music, were the festival's emerging quartet in residence. They performed a musical set for Winchester Go LD, a charity for those with learning disabilities. The opening concert on Friday afternoon featured works by Brahms, Ravel, Pamela Harrison, and George Crumb. The performances were of a high standard, generating lively discussion at the Friends reception. A late-night concert at St. Lawrence Church treated a sold-out audience to a programme spanning centuries from Bach to contemporary composer Intifikis Vizuti. A pre-concert talk on Saturday morning explored Schoenberg's importance to classical music, followed by a concert on the theme of 19th century Vienna, featuring pivotal works by Mahler, Eisner, Beethoven, Schoenberg and Schubert. The Saturday evening concert featured the folk band ZRI, who provided live music accompaniment to a screening of Charlie Chaplin's silent film, The Adventurer. The UK premiere of a concertina for solo clarinet and strings, performed by Robert Plain, was a highlight. He said, being in the company of Schoenberg, Shostakovich and Charlie Chaplin has been intellectually stimulating, but above all, it has been great fun. What a wonderful way to spend the first 4 days of May. Festival director Kate Gould said, I think this festival really packed a punch, not just with the extraordinary quality of our international guest performance and the bold and diverse programmes, but the joyful, relaxed atmosphere at the concerts. I wanted to cover all the bases with more accessible pieces at concerts like the Gala at Theatre Royal Winchester, more challenging contemporary concept pieces, and as always, great chamber works by the core classical composers at the heart of it all. For more information, visit Winchester Chamber Music website.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Raise a glass to pub after an extensive refurbishment. A busy Winchester pub will open its doors again to customers after an extensive refurbishment. The County Arms on Romsey Road will reopen on Thursday, May the 15th, that was yesterday, at 11 a.m. after 6 weeks of closure for major renovations. The pub will be under Green King's franchise model, with Robert Plunton as the franchisee. Robert said, I have managed the pub for Green King for the past 3 years, and it has been a fantastic experience. Great company, fantastic team, I've kept them all on, and fantastic customers. There will be a series of celebrations throughout the day, including a ribbon cutting at 5 p.m. by George Hatt. George is referred to by many as a local hero, said Robert. He has been diagnosed with an aggressive and incurable form of brain cancer, but still manages to laugh, joke and light up the world to those around him. He is a true inspiration. His sister Jess has set up a charity fundraiser, Hats Off to George, where 50% of donations go towards fulfilling George's bucket list, and the other 50% go to the brain tumour charity. There will also be table magic between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. and a performance by acoustic duo Ginny and James from 9 p.m. The works include a complete overhaul over both internal and external areas, new furnishings and a complete new image, 9 brand new televisions, a pool table and darts area.
Thank you, Jackie. Final decision on £7.85 million of new school transport. Plans to incorporate school transport into community transport services in Hampshire have reached the final stage. On Friday, May the 16th, Hampshire County Council could be given the approval to spend £7.85 million over 6 years to enter into contracts for Connect and Connect minibus hire services. The last one will provide 5 contracts for school transport across Hampshire. The decision to include school transport in the community transport services came last year after a review of the proposal to withdraw £1.7 million from services, including £800,000 to support local buses. For £500,000 for the community transport Connect Dial a Ride, and £142,000 for Connect Group Hire, which could leave thousands of vulnerable users without an alternative. The review showed that halting the local bus services would negatively impact school transport, increasing the cost of that service. The revised approach would involve using some of the contract hours procured through the Connect service contracts to provide school transport journeys where possible. The final stage of the plan will be approved by Luli Bowerman, the Cabinet Member for Highways and Passenger Transport, on Friday, that is today. Connect, formerly Dial a Ride and Call and Go, is a pre-bookable service that provides transport to those who cannot use conventional bus services, primarily frail, older and disabled people. Richard, please.
Revamped toilets reopen. Major public toilets in Winchester have reopened after a two-month refurbishment. The loos in Abbey Gardens closed on March the 10th and reopened on schedule on Monday, May the 12th. The City Council has recently come under fire for the worsening standards in the facilities, notably at Market Lane by St Maurice's Covert. The Council agreed a major refurbishment programme last year, and the Abbey Gardens in the Broadway are the first major ones to be upgraded. The City Council is committed to spending £700,000 upgrading toilets across the district.
Thank you, Richard. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible, please. Well, thanks to all our support team for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to my readers, Richard.
Goodbye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Goodbye until the next time.